Once again, my name's Toby, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. The 164 group speaks we're really happy to have the speaker here tonight. Personally, I've known this gentleman all of my recovery. We met almost 8 years ago in an unlikely place that I ever thought I would be, and I'm sure it's going to be part of the story, and he'll tell it. Since then, we remained very good friends. It's one of those things that when you don't see somebody all the time, but when you pick up the phone, it's just like yesterday. I've talked to him personally. We've shared many a personal discussion. If there's anyone who lives the program, wants the program, and definitely has a simple reliance on a higher power, it's this gentleman, and he's an admiration to me, and also a role model. With that being said, I introduce you to Josh T.
Yay.
Hello, everybody. Josh, alcoholic. Like to start off the way my home group taught me to start. And my sobriety date is July 8th of 2005. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I sponsor others. My home group is the Tampa Bay Young People's Group. We meet at 500 West Platte in South Tampa on Thursdays at 7:30. And I'm glad to be here in its stead. Toby, I appreciate the warm introduction. We have known each other for almost 8 years now, and you know, Toby's always been there for me when I needed somebody, so you know, I really appreciate that. I'll tell you in a general way, what it was like for me what happened, what it's like now. I come from a family that's definitely has a lot of alcoholics in it. My grandfather on my mother's side was alcoholic. He died sober 35, 37 years, something like that. Both his sons, my mom's brothers, are alcoholic. One in recovery and one not. My younger brother is also an alcoholic in recovery. So it's definitely all over my family. I remember growing up as a kid and my mom telling me, you know, to be wary of alcohol, you know, because there's a good chance that I would be alcoholic. And that fear kept me away for a long time. You know, I definitely, I was a good kid. You know, my parents are still married today. You know, so I don't really have anything to blame my alcoholism on. You know, I'll tell you why I'm an alcoholic in a bit. But, you know, fear definitely ruled my life from a young age. You know, it controlled the decisions that I made. It controlled my, you know, lifestyle, and I didn't really know any other way, you know. And I grew up very Christian. My dad's a minister. You know, we went to church a lot, like 3 or 4 times a week, and a very sheltered background. We went to Christian school. I couldn't listen to anything but Christian music. We didn't have a television for about 2 years. And, you know, I definitely lived a, once I got old enough, you know, I definitely lived a double life. I definitely had... I'm definitely going to say definitely quite a bit tonight. You know, my isms started early. I would eat to feel differently. You know, I'm going to stick to our singleness of purpose. And obviously, once I started coming to AA, all the other stuff kind of slid away, you know. But I definitely seek attention. I like your approval, you know. I like to feel validated a lot by other people. And, you know, those things were part of who I was. I didn't have my first drink until I was 17. A lot of it because of fear, a lot of it because I was, you know, busy doing other stuff. Played football. I loved that. I played baseball. I was an athlete. I'd like to think I was a better athlete than I really was, but I enjoyed those things, you know. I still enjoy them today. And so those things kept me busy. In my junior year before the summer, I was on the weightlifting team. There was a guy that was a year younger than me on the weightlifting team and was getting stronger than me, you know, so only two guys in a certain weight class can compete at each meet, and I felt threatened by him. So I started to tease him a lot on this at this weightlifting meet. I went to high school in a place called Middleburg, which is just south of Jacksonville. And we were at a weightlifting meet in Ocala, and we were driving back and, you know, just relentless, you know, picking on this kid. And, you know, he hadn't done anything to me, you know, but I was afraid. And we got back to the gym, to our school, to the locker room, changing clothes, and I, you know, was still messing with this guy, and I don't remember what I was saying to him, but I was poking him in the chest, and he was a big kid, you know. I call him a kid, but the weightlifting coach walked in the side door with one of the cheerleaders, so I turned to look, and he cold cocked me, and you know, I brought it on myself, obviously. Knocked me out in one punch. You know, I locked up, fell backwards, hit this bench that was screwed into the ground. And the only reason I tell this story is because after that, I carried around a lot of shame, and you know, I felt humiliated, and I never really talked about it. And I quit the weightlifting team. I quit playing football. I dyed my hair blue and became Mosh Pit Josh. I got really into the punk rock scene, you know, which was, it was good for me, you know, because it gave me another avenue for camaraderie and, you know, feeling like a part of something. And, you know, if you've ever been a part of that, then you'd understand. You know, but with that, a lot of things change, you know. Well, they did for me. And, you know, the environment that I started to be around and the things involved in that changed, and so I started drinking. And first drink I ever had was a Zima, and I like to say that because it's funny. We had Zimas and wine coolers because that was the only thing that we could get. And it was me and my two buddies, Brian and Dave, and three girls. It was the summer before my senior year, and it was probably one of the best summers that I've had. You know, there was carefree still, you know. I had a job, but it was part-time at a sub shop. And, you know, I loved alcohol from the very first start. I loved it, you know. Like we were talking about before the meeting started, I didn't really like the taste of alcohol at first, but what it did for me, the effect that it produced, was really what I was going for. I didn't know it at the time, but once I had that first taste, that is what sucked me in, you know. My cares went away. That fear went away. I felt like I could be, you know, the person I wanted to be. Cool, you know, attractive to girls, the center of the, you know, center of attention, the life of the party. And it was like that from day one. Looking back on that now, that first drink, I started drinking alcoholically from the start. You know, I didn't know it at the time, but everyone else stopped drinking. They were doing whatever, passed out. But, you know, I finished everything that was there, you know, because I really, really liked what it did for me. It wasn't long before I was really overdoing it. You know, a few weeks later, a friend of mine, his parents were out of town, and we had a party there. It was, you know, 10, 15 people having a good time, you know, smoking my first cigarettes, really feeling cool. And, you know, I finished most of a fifth of Goldschlager and probably had some alcohol poisoning, you know, dry heaving, and had my first consequences that night, too. It wasn't anything drastic, but my friends didn't know what to do with me. So they called my older brother. You know, we were 5 minutes from my parents' house, and my older brother came and picked me up and brought me home at 2 a.m. My parents were up. You know, they were like, were you on anything other, you know, are you on drugs? And I told them, no, just booze. And they're like, all right, well, they put me to bed, and, you know, I was grounded for 4 days, and that was it. So, you know, there were consequences, but it was overlooked. And part of that probably was because, you know, denial is strong, definitely, and children of alcoholics, you know, my mom being in the daughter of an alcoholic, both dry and while drinking. You know, she had been through a lot of that, so. I graduated from high school, still managed to do well. You know, I'm definitely a slacker as far as doing homework and stuff like that is concerned, but I absorb things very quickly. And so had an academic scholarship, got into University of North Florida. Highlights of University of North Florida were I was there and gone in about 5 weeks. I traded my skateboard for a carton of Marlboro Reds. And I burned my arm with cigarettes to try to impress this girl. And I still have those scars, and that was 13 years ago. You know, I never went to class, and that was the thing. You know, I was more interested in the scene and what people were doing and, you know, where were they drinking and where was the party and, you know, trying to be the life of it all and not as concerned about, you know, scholastic stuff. And so I called my parents and came home, and they did what they always did, which was try to, you know, put me back on my feet and slap me on the rear end and say, you know, go get them, Tiger. And so that's what they did. I got a job, you know, nothing to talk about, really, selling video games. And, you know, went to community college where I helped them get second place in a pool tournament. And that was about it. You know, I tell you, these few stories, you know, really just to qualify myself, you know, as it was read and as the book talks about, you know, it's important for us, you know, to share, especially with the newcomer, you know, what it was like for us, what was attractive about drinking, you know, my drinking stories, you know, because that's what helps one alcoholic relate to another, you know, is I've been there, I've done that. And even if the same scenario isn't the same, you know, as far as the exact story, you know, the feelings is really what's important, you know. So through community college, you know, drinking was always first, you know. Once I started drinking, I'd try anything, though, you know. So definitely loved acid. Smoked a lot of weed and you know, and a lot of that's still a blur, even 7.5 years later. You know, a lot of those times are still stuff I don't remember. You know, no big consequences yet. You know, losing jobs, not showing up for stuff. You know, a lot of family stuff. That's probably when, you know, I started hurting my family. Not necessarily physically, but with not being around, not being accountable. My parents decided to move here to Tampa from Jacksonville. My dad got a job, so he moved down here, and I could really see that my life wasn't going very well. You know, it wasn't going anywhere either, where I was, and so I still had the same friends. Told them moving to Tampa, so I did. I moved down here, you know, with kind of hopes of starting over. You know, to get some direction, you know, find something to do with my life, I guess. And so I got back in the restaurant industry, which wasn't good for me, you know, late hours, fast-paced lifestyle, and nothing really changed. You know, I found the people who drank like I drink. You know, we were closing up the restaurant at 2 a.m. You know, you could drink for another hour here, and which was different than Jacksonville. And then going to somebody's house, you know, and then staying up till 6, 7 a.m., drinking and a lot of other things. And, you know, really nothing changed. You know, as much as I wanted for there to be something different, you know, I still find people who drink like I do. You know, I want to surround myself with those people because, A, if I don't have something that I want, you know, more than likely they have it. But I think more importantly is because, you know, if I'm drinking around people who are drinking at the pace that I'm drinking, then I don't have to look at myself. You know, I don't have to say, whoa, you know, maybe there's a problem when I have to drink 3 or 4 beers, you know, just to feel normal, to start my drinking. You know, to turn the brain off. Not too long after moving down here, 2003, it was a buddy of mine's birthday. We drank at the old Ruby Tuesdays where I worked on Brusby Downs. Left there, went across the street to the Bennigans that is no longer there. Continued to drink. Sang some drunk James Taylor karaoke, which I enjoyed doing. And, you know, then we went and picked up some beer at the store, and I went and bought some steak tips from the Sweet Bay and a shrimp cocktail because I was going to make myself some food. And on my way home in the parking lot where Cracker Barrel is now, there on Bears and Brusby Downs, I got pulled over. Police officer asked me if I'd been drinking. I threw my cigarette out the window first, and where he was standing. Told him I had a few. We did the field sobriety test. I did not pass, and went to jail. And the insane thing about the trip there and before getting booked in was I was convinced I was not drunk. You know, I was trying to convince the officer of that, obviously, but I was convinced I wasn't drunk. Yeah, I guess my tolerance was so high from, you know, doing it so often that I was convinced I was not drunk. did the convinced so much that I did the breathalyzer, which came out to 0.2 something or other, and obviously I was drunk, and so I got booked in, and I was supposed to be at work the next day. I did what I always did. I called my folks to bail me out. I called. That was probably about 4 in the morning that I got booked in, so I waited till my parents got up. I called my mom's cell phone, and I said, or maybe I called the house, I don't know. But, Mom, I'm in jail, come pick me up. And, immediately, tears, And looking back on that now, I had no regard whatsoever for her feelings, for the position that she was in. My concern was, come get me out of jail, No regard for others' feelings, Selfishness and self-centeredness definitely rule my life, It's the things that, the book says that I must be rid of, or it will kill me. They did come pick me up after they got out of work. So I, I was almost in general population. And, they picked me up and, I lost my car for 30 days. So I had to ride my bike, 10 miles to work back and forth. And had to go to DUI counterattack, which was what Hillsborough County wants you to do for your DUIs. And I went, I complied. The counselor asked me, how much I drank. And, so I dumbed it down a little bit for her. And I told her about 7 or 8 drinks a day. That was dumbed down. And, she asked me if I'd blacked out. And I had once. I didn't really know what it was at the time. We were playing cards with my buddy. And playing spades. I remember playing spades, and then the next thing I remember is I'm standing outside the front door, and this guy's yelling at me, ready to fight me. And I'm like, what the heck just happened, I didn't really know there was a lapse in time, but he told me what happened, and I said some things about the guy's mother, and so I went in and apologized to him because I had no recollection whatsoever that had happened. So that was my experience with blackouts at that point. So, I told the guidance, the counselor about that. And she told me that I should go to AA. So I, with that being the only place I was allowed to drive, said, okay, no problem. They gave me my little form to sign, which I'm sure a lot of you have seen people do. And so I went to meetings twice a week. It wasn't far from my house. But that's all that I did. I went to those two meetings. There were people in that meeting that I still remember telling me, the fundamentals of what we tell a newcomer, which is maybe you should get a sponsor. Well, not maybe, but you should get a sponsor. You should get a home group. You should work the steps. I didn't listen to any of that. I was too young to be an alcoholic. And I stayed dry for about 3 months. I was miserable. I remember my mom telling me once, you're acting like you do when you're drinking. But I know you're not drinking because you're living at my house and you can't drive anywhere. That kind of resonated with me. I stayed dry for 3 months. My grandfather died. Was dying, so we went to Louisiana, where he lived. Watched him die for a couple of days with hospice at his house. I had no avenue other than drinking to deal with my emotions. So I ended up drinking with my second cousin. And then we came back from there to Tampa. I stayed dry for another 3 months. I'm still working at the restaurant, dating a girl, in nursing school at USF. decided to go to a keg party while I was still not drinking. And the elusive thought came into my mind that it would be okay to drink if she brought me the beer from the keg. That made perfect sense to me at the time. No thought of my DUI, no thought that I drove there, you know, no other thought. You know, the book talks about, you know, Fred, who stopped at the sandwich place and had a few milks and then decided that it would be okay to drink whiskey as long as it was in his milk. You know, I can't imagine doing that because it sounds terrible. But that's kind of how it went for me. You know, there was no, this doesn't make sense. It was just perfect. Let's go with it. So I had a couple drinks and went home, and you know, and that started me on another couple years of drinking before I got to the jumping off place. And you know, throughout that time, I got real involved in some other substances, the white powdery ones that enabled me to drink as much as I wanted to. And a couple months before I got sober, I decided to join the military. I thought I needed some structure in my life. I thought that would be the cure-all for me. I thought it would give me some direction. And, you know, because these are the things my dad has always been telling me. You know, he's 31 years retired command master chief, also before he was a minister. And, well, they kind of ran concurrently for part of it, but that doesn't matter. But so I went on a 5-day binge and then went and signed up for the Navy. And, you know, I did everything. It was the delayed entry program, you know, because the job that I wanted didn't start for another 8 months. So I signed up, and I was supposed to come back in 8 months to be in the military. I figured that I would go back to Jacksonville and hang out with all my buddies for 8 months until I would ship out. I did. I had a lot of great times, you know. If alcohol, like, if drinking wasn't fun, I probably wouldn't have done it as much, you know. But, you know, there was a lot of good times, you know. I would be a liar if I sat here and told you that all my drinking was terrible and I hated my life and that's why I got sober. You know, that's not the truth. I had a lot of great times. Fast forwarding some to get sober, I came back to join the military. I stayed the night in the hotel, went to MEPS the next morning to ship out. By that time, I had stopped doing the powdery substance because I could do that because alcohol was my master. But at that time, from all the beer drinking, I had gained a bunch of weight, was overweight, couldn't ship out. You know, my plan for my life just went down the tubes. And no one would take me in. My parents were fed up with me. My friends were fed up with me. The only person that would take me in was my younger brother. And so I went to live in a one-bedroom apartment with him. I lived in the back closet, sleeping on a futon mattress that was not on a futon. It was just on the mattress on the floor. I had about 2 egg crates worth of clothes, still worked in the restaurant industry, and I was really delusional. One time I was out relieving myself in the bushes, and I thought a bat was flying at my head, so I did some army rolls while I was drunk out in the bushes behind my brother's house. And to try to get away from the bat. You know, because my drinking had gone to a level where, you know, if I wasn't drinking every day, you know, my body was starting to go through withdrawal. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't have any plan. I felt completely defeated, you know. I didn't know where my life was going. I hated my life. I felt like a complete failure. And the only solution to that, I thought, was to kill myself. I decided on how I was going to kill myself. I was going to drive my car into the same telephone pole that my buddy had done about a year prior and killed himself. He was probably one of us, and he never got the opportunity to come into these rooms. And I like to share that when I come in here, because it's certainly a gift that we have. All of my friends and my, family had realized that something was very wrong with me. And so a few days before I was going to do this suicide attempt, my dad showed up at the apartment door, knocking on the door. I opened it, thought it was very odd that he was at the front door because he lived in Tampa and I was in Jacksonville. He asked me if he could come in. I said, fine. He said, go get dressed and come out in the living room. So I did that. A elderly gentleman walked in also, who looked remarkably like my grandfather, who died sober, who I had a lot of regard for. And they sat me down and asked me if I needed some help. And really without too much reservation, I said yes, I didn't know what else to do. And I called work, told them I won't be in, I'm going to rehab. And my boss said, yeah, I've been 3 times, they'll tell you not to work here anymore. And that was the last time I talked to him. I went to a rehab facility that's probably a stone's throw away from here. And I was inpatient for 90 days. Do you have to go to treatment in order to get sober? Absolutely not. Was it good for me? Yes. It gave me a place to be apart from things, to really focus on my life while I was working through the first few steps, and it was really good for me. Probably the most important thing I learned while I was there, though, is something that they required us to do, which was to get a sponsor and to be through the first 5 steps in order to get out. I got a sponsor. I asked a guy. I asked two guys, one who I never called, another one who I decided I didn't want to work with, like I really knew anything about AA at the time. And then the third guy I asked, really was excited about helping another alcoholic. And that, probably at certain points helped save my life too. His name's Daniel. He lives around here, still my sponsor today. And our first meeting, he came over to the rehab facility to start going through the book with me. And he told me, get your stuff together and come with me. And I'm like, okay, why? He's like, well, Dr. Myers told me I need to take you to the nut bin over here at the hospital. And I thought they found me out. And so I start to go gather my stuff, and he's like, no, don't do that. I'm just messing with you. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, at least he understands. And we started going through these steps, and he took me through the book, and, we read the book together, because that's what his sponsor had done with him, and that's what we did. I had a bit of reservation as far as, I knew I was powerless over alcohol when I came in, because I knew I couldn't stop. There had been so many points throughout my drinking that I had wanted to stop. And, a lie detector test, this is going to be the last time. And I'd always drank again. You know, but the first step that gave me a little reservation was the third step, you know, and this God thing. And, you know, I had been through my ups and downs with being super Christian and, you know, falling away from that and not really knowing where I stood and, you know, what it all meant. And, you know, one of the first things that in reading the book that my sponsor pointed out to me about this whole God thing was in the second step. And it's, you know, all I needed to make my start was a willingness to believe there was something bigger than myself, to just be willing. And I had that, you know, I had the willingness. And everything's come from there, you know. Almost out of time. You know, a lot has happened in my sobriety. You know, I got real involved in the young people's thing. I'm not nearly as young as I was then. But, you know, I got real involved in young people's conferences and, you know, I got a lot out of that, you know, me personally. And, you know, I went through the steps and I started sponsoring guys, and I probably learned more about myself through sponsoring others than I did through going the steps, you know, with my sponsor, you know, because it's not an ending process, you know, it's something that keeps going, you know, it's back and forth throughout them. You know, it's really exceptional how it works. You know, 2.5 years into sobriety, dating a girl, you know, I thought was the one. That relationship ended. I was self-employed at the time, lost my jobs, you know, lost my job, 6 months past due and all my credit cards, completely broke. You know, probably one of the hardest times in my sobriety, you know. And when things are tough, man, you know, get right back in the middle of AA, you know, go to meetings, you know, talk to people, get involved, you know, be more concerned about other people than yourself. You know, that's really what keeps me in here. And, you know, I made it through that. I got a great job after that. It wasn't great at the time, but I've been with them for 5 years now. And, you know, it's provided me, you know, a home, you know, paying for a wedding, paying for the birth of my son, you know, through just being able to do the stuff that I learned here, through the small things here, you know, learning how to show up consistently for a meeting, you know, because I'm accountable here makes me accountable in my life outside. You know, simple duties like shaking somebody's hand, you know, and introducing myself, you know, making coffee, you know, learning how to get outside of myself. Things that I learned here, you know, help solve my everyday problems. You know, it's simple how it works, but it works. Today, you know, married, my wife had 2 kids in her previous marriage, so I have 3 kids now. You know, I coach baseball. You know, I go to meetings. I'm a member of society, you know, which I always felt so outside of. You know, it's amazing what this program can do for you. You know, that I have hope today, you know, which is something that I didn't have, you know, before I got sober. I was absolutely hopeless. I didn't know a way out other than to die. And through coming here and listening to other people and doing things that didn't make any sense, by taking suggestions from people in these rooms that it actually worked for, it happened, you know. I have sobriety today, contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. That's it, you know. The work that I put in today ensures my sobriety for today. There's no tomorrow that's guaranteed. I should be done. you know, if you didn't hear anything tonight that resonated with you, it happens. But continue to go to meetings, you know. Continue to talk to other alcoholics because, you know, it took a while, but it happened for me that I heard somebody tell my story. And I said, that guy knows what it was like to be me. And that's what keeps me coming here, you know. Being able to relay that experience to other people, you know. And sponsor, steps, continuing to search for that higher power. You know, those have been the keys to my sobriety today and for the life I never would have dreamed I had, you know. And thanks for letting me be here.
Josh T.